This is VK6 Amateur Radio News with News West for Sunday the 24th of October. Yes, October's nearly done, and there are only 61 radio buying days left until Christmas. Today is the new Amateurs edition, and we'll acknowledge those from Western Australia who have recently gained a licence, and we'll also provide information that newcomers to the hobby will find interesting and helpful, and perhaps it will refresh the memories of those of us who have been around a bit longer. There's an update from Will on the Great Australian Bite Project, and we comment again about unethical behaviours of those who say that they are supporting the Wireless Institute of Australia. So let's get on with it.
Getting into the hobby of amateur radio is as simple as getting in touch with Ham College, the Northern Corridor Radio Group, or the Radio and Electronics School in getting your foundation license. If getting to Perth for education and assessment is a problem, let Ham College know so that they can work out a solution via hamcollege.org.au. We also know that the Bunbury and the Geraldton clubs are gearing up to be able to provide both training and assessments. The next Ham College Foundation course is on the 4th and 5th of December. If you want to do an assessment on December the 10th, let the college know. That address again, hamcollege.org.au. To encourage new members on air, we'd like to share with you the people who have gained and upgraded their license in the past month. A small crop this month, only 5 new or changed calls. Expect a bumper harvest in November and December. So, at Advanced, David, Dan, Fred and Nick, and at Foundation, Alex. For new calls, congratulations on joining amateur radio. And if you're a dab hand, enjoy your new on-air identity. If you hear any of these new calls on air, please make them feel welcome. In case you're wondering, there are 1,405 amateur licenses held in VK6 today, a net drop of 7 licensees. So come on, encourage someone you know who is keen but reluctant to get their license.
Last week, I spoke about the misleading remarks made by people who, in their quest to support or promote the Wireless Institute of Australia, denied or at best trivialised the role played by the Radio Amateur Society of Australia in securing the 2x1 call signs for contesting in Australia. This action was only a part of the concerted efforts of a few people to gaslight RASA. There are those, including some in the highest places in the Wireless Institute of Australia, wanting to take revenge on WA Amateur Radio News for reporting the truth over the last 7 or so years. You see, if someone like News West doesn't report the facts, who will? Certainly not the so-called WIA National News that calls itself the home service, with very few stories actually from home and too many stories not about amateur radio. The home service that rejected an historical item from myself a few weeks ago, telling a story from 70-something years ago, because it was, and I quote, an opinion piece and was critical of the ACMA and the WIA, a 70-something-year-old story. So how do you figure that out? You'll recall that we had to postpone Perth Tech. However, prior to the decision to postpone being made, our request to place an advertisement for the event in the Wireless Institute's amateur radio magazine was discarded. The magazine's editor at the time was asked to resign because of a totally inappropriate editorial in the same issue. There was no reason given by the editor for not placing our advertisement. The president of the Wireless Institute assured me that our advertisement would appear in the next issue of the amateur radio magazine. And guess what? It was discarded again by the next editor. Last week, before I put the item about 2x1 call signs to air, I sent a courtesy copy to the Wireless Institute president, who showed it to the rest of the board, which he probably should do. A birdie told me that some of the directors were furious and were hell-bent on revenge against WA Amateur Radio News, that's us, for telling a story about inappropriate behaviour of some of their so-called supporters, which I called the Wireless Institute of Australia Choir Boys. This week, a member of RASA sent a suggestion for a news item to the Home Service and received this response, and I quote, "Sooner get something from our own folk, mate. Now, I know that Scott, the WIA's president, is keen to resolve differences and to work for the betterment of the whole amateur radio community, and I fully support him because it's important for the Wireless Institute of Australia to be successful. However, old attitudes and prejudices are in the way. The Wireless Institute is in a hole. Their finances have crumbled over several years, and remember that last year, JobKeeper grants from the government allowed the red ink to be put away. If it wasn't for that huge amount of money from JobKeeper, the Wireless Institute would have shown a loss. The board is still bleeding over the loss of the deed with the ACMA, and if you ever examined the document that they submitted in their attempt to retain the deed, you wouldn't be surprised. They need to learn that bullshit does not baffle brains. It was full of rubbish. And there's more, much more, but for another time perhaps. If you're a WIA member or contemplating becoming one, you need to take heed at what we're telling you because you're not hearing about any of this really concerning stuff from the Wireless Institute itself. The organisation is being run on bitterness and revenge, and its news outlets are carefully muted. The culture is toxic and is reflected in the bully tactics of the choir boys as they sing the tired old songs again and again. If that's the Wireless Institute of Australia that you really want, just do nothing and you'll have it. Or you could start asking the questions and make a difference. No pitchforks required, just take an interest and ask the questions. I'm Bob VK6POP and I'm commenting in my capacity as producer of News West. News West has been reporting on the Wireless Institute of Australia since before the formation of the Radio Amateur Society of Australia.
We first ran this item in January of this year. However, with all the newcomers to the hobby since then, we thought it worth another airing. Do you struggle with a 24-hour clock and get confused when reference is made to UTC and GMT? What do these things even mean? Stick around to hear the big explanation. It will be as clear as mud to you afterwards. Firstly, to be able to understand and usefully apply UTC and GMT, your lot will be made so much easier if you get your head around the 24-hour clock and understand the offset of different time zones. So without any explanation yet of what or how UTC and GMT are, let's just accept that both indicate the time at the prime meridian, 0 degrees longitude, which is at Greenwich in London, England. That needs to be accepted because time zones everywhere else are expressed as relative to Greenwich Mean Time. If the time zone is east of Greenwich, the offset is positive and west is negative. Because the world turns and time is more or less measured by the sun, that would raise a technical eyebrow or two, but let's just leave it at that for a minute. The 24-hour clock marks the day by beginning at 0000 hours, expressed as 0000 hours at the stroke of midnight, then begins counting. 1 a.m. is 0100, commonly expressed as 0100 hours, and so on. Noon is 1200 hours, 6 p.m. is 1800 hours, and so on, until we reset to 0000 at midnight. Here in VK6, our time zone is West Australian Standard Time, which is GMT plus 8 hours. So when it's midnight Greenwich Mean Time, i.e. 0000 hours, it's 0 plus 8 here in WA, which is 0800 hours. If it's 1200 GMT, it's 12 plus 6, that's 1800 hours local time. So, have you got that? Simple arithmetic. Simply add 8 hours to whatever GMT is, and you've got your local time. I suggest you start thinking in 24-hour clock for everything, and it becomes second nature. Try setting your watch, car clock, TV, computer, or whatever you can to the 24-hour format. You'll soon catch on. Now, for those whose brow has been creasing over the GMT sun time thing, let me briefly explain. Firstly, Greenwich Mean Time isn't a time standard. It's a time zone. Greenwich Mean Time is the yearly average or mean of the time each day when the sun crosses the prime meridian at the Royal Observatory in Greenwich. Because the Earth isn't perfectly round and because it does wobble a bit, the mean time can go off ever so slightly over a period of time. And along comes Universal Coordinated Time, known as UTC. There are actually two main components to the Universal Coordinated Time standard. Those are the International Atomic Time and Universal Time. TAI, or International Atomic Time, is a scale that helps determine the speed at which clocks should tick. It is found by combining the time of more than 200 atomic clocks located worldwide. In other words, it's pretty accurate. UTI, or Universal Time, is determined by the Earth's rotation. Because of that fact, it is also sometimes called astronomical or solar time. It is what timekeepers use to measure the length of a single day on the planet. Thanks to these two elements, UTC is used to synchronize clocks in various countries all over the world across 24 different time zones. Universal Time was actually created during the Washington Meridian Conference held in 1884. This is when the idea of a 24-hour time zone, a concept that we currently use, came into fruition and became adopted widely. Before that time, Greenwich Mean Time, or GMT, was actually the world standard. However, it wasn't until 1960 that the International Radio Consultative Committee came up with the concept of Coordinated Universal Time. Just a year later, in 1967, it was officially adopted as the primary timekeeping standard. Greenwich Mean Time is not considered a standard anymore, yet it is the label of one of the 24-hour total time zones on Earth, used by countries in Africa, Western Europe, and the UK during the winter season.
Amateur Radio, you're standing in it. This is VK6, Amateur Radio News, and you're listening to News West.
How did Jamboree on the Air go for you last week? It sounds like there were several amateur radio clubs involved around Perth, or even perhaps beyond. It seems that some people were new to JOTA, and this was evident by some of the questions being asked in the time leading up to the event. Could JOTA have been more successful, or effective, if only this had happened, or that could be put into place, or if only you knew a few more things beforehand? Usually by Sunday afternoon, you have a mental list of, if only we did this, items. Do you think it would be useful to have a JOTA wrap, possibly on a Zoom meeting, where common ground stuff can be heard from each other and feedback given to the Scouts WA and to the amateur radio community? WA Amateur Radio News is happy to conduct a Zoom meeting to collect feedback and chew on ideas for next time. And there's no time like the present, while the memory of the experience is still afresh. If you think it would be useful, shoot us an email to newswest@vk6.net and we can put a meeting together.
In New Hams this week, I want to take a look at Watts. What? You may ask. Yes, Watts. Whiskey Alpha Tango Tango Sierra, that's what. A watt is a unit of power, volts times amps, is how you calculate it. We all remember that. And we all use it in one way or another. The radios we use are rated by their output in watts. I believe that in the past, some manufacturers rated their transmitters by their power input, which of course wouldn't have a direct, universally applicable relationship to the actual output. And that's about as technical as I'm going to get. I want to talk about how much of your transmitter's output power you should use. One standard that does the rounds of amateur radio, and it's one that I like for its simplicity and clarity, is the correct amount of power to use is the amount of power that does the job, or some paraphrase of that statement. Sometimes I get lazy and leave my radios on max power when half power or less will do the job. The thing is, if you never try lower power, you may never learn how well you will do on low power. I guess it's more about satisfying curiosity than anything else, because you won't get into trouble running full legal power. And assuming your radio is built to withstand the way you intend to use it, power levels won't break the radio, all things being equal. There are some caveats though. If you're using digital modes such as slow scan TV or using FM or AM, where the radio is working at 100% duty cycle, unless you know that it's capable of running full power in that mode, at 100% duty cycle, you'll need to back off the power output. Have you heard the term duty cycle? Duty cycle is the proportion of time during which a component, device or system is operated. The duty cycle can be expressed as a ratio or as a percentage. In radio, 100% duty cycle means the radio can operate it at its maximum output for 100% of the time. That would mean different things for different modes, for instance, sideband versus AM. Not all manufacturers will provide a duty cycle statement in the specifications. An example is my desktop radio, which I use for the news broadcast on 80 metres. Its power output specification is 100 watts at 100% duty cycle. It readily transmits the news for an hour solid at 100 watts and barely gets warm, whereas another radio I tried once was getting very hot at 10 watts. As long as you're cautious and check on your radio as you do different things with different modes, keep an eye on your radio, do the touch test on the heat sink at the back, and you and your radio will be fine. How you use your radio is a bit like going for a swim. Dip your toe in first to test the water. I'm Bob, VK6POP.
Nets are a great way to get to know other amateurs for asking questions and sharing information. There is a calendar of nets around Perth on the VK6.net website. WA Amateur Radio News manages the VK6.net website, and any amendments and additions can be sent by email to newswest@vk6.net. There are several nets running in and around Perth, and you can access these as well as others running nationally or internationally. Today, we'll focus on local nets beginning on Sunday mornings and running through a week's worth of nets. These nets are on every day. 1600 WA SSTV net on 3.630 MHz. They will use either EasyPal or MMSSTV software. See wasstv.net. 1830 hours. A daily 2-meter SSB net held on 144.125 MHz USB with a talkback channel on 70 SIMs 438.975 MHz. All are welcome. Other nets are Sundays 10:30 WARGT Technical and General Net on VK6 RLM Repeater. Wednesdays 1.855 MHz AM net, hosted by Steve VK6VZ and Phil VK6GX. This net runs Wednesday evenings at 7:30 PM on 1.855 MHz using AM rather than SSB. Wyson HF net, the Wireless Institute Civil and Emergency Network, meet on air every Wednesday for discussion. 2000 hours to 2030 hours on 3.599.2 MHz plus or minus QRM, followed by the Wyson VHF net at 2030 hours to 2100 on VK6 RAP 146.700 MHz or VK6 RIC 146.875 MHz. On Fridays, VKDMR net on TG505 hub and spoke format. Fridays 1800 to 1900 on DMR TG505. On Saturdays, F Troop is held every week on Saturday at 8 AM. If you have a foundation license, or if you'd like to welcome new or returning amateurs into the hobby, drop in for a chat. F Troop is on VK6 RLM on 146.750 MHz FM via the VK3 JED Echolink Conference or via IRLP node 9558. There's a lot more to nets out there. We've just spoken about local ones. nets are listed in a calendar on the VK6.net website. Drop in and check out the full nets scene.
Yesterday, around 20 people gathered at the Gidgegenup Recreation Club for the WA Amateur Radio News and the Perth Tech Raffle Draw. Unfortunately, because we had to get the news published before the event happened, we can't give you any results yet. However, the raffle draw results are up on the VK6.net website now, and in next week's Club Focus edition, we'll talk about the AGM. Not that there's anything exciting about an AGM, unless there's something contentious happening, and in the case of WA Amateur Radio News, the AGM was ordinarily routine. And the main features of the day to be actually enjoyed were the social chit-chat, lunch, and the raffle draw. So at the time of hearing this news broadcast, someone's the proud new owner of an ICOM 705 portable software-defined radio and backpack. Thanks to everyone who supported the WA Amateur Radio News Perth Tech raffle, even though Perth Tech was postponed. Let's see what 2022 says in terms of being able to run the event next year.
This is News West, your amateur radio news on VK6 ARN, originating on the News West linked repeater network and HF relays.
The Great Australian Bite Project Update. The project is to install an IC9700 with beams pointing towards the east across the Great Australian Bite. The site will be able to be remotely accessed by amateurs using the software Remote Hams on the three bands 144, 432 and 1296 MHz. The ICOM IC9700 transceiver from ICOM Australia has arrived in Albany. The 9700 is a long-term loan from ICOM Australia. Thank you, ICOM. Also, a computer that controls the 9700 for remote operation has been purchased. A power supply is available, but a backup 13.8 volt 20 amp supply is being sought. Other equipment being sourced are an internet Wi-Fi router, an ARLEC Wi-Fi switcher to reboot equipment and switch power supplies, and a Wi-Fi link from the internet to where the 9700 will be located. Coax and connectors have already been donated. Donations are being made to the project, with more being sought. A list of donations can be seen from the project website, vk6uu.id.au/ic-9700.html. The Great Australian Bite is one of the world's best tropo paths for VHF and above. The first two-way contacts on 144 MHz was way back on the 30th of December 1951, around 3 p.m. It was between Rollo VK6BO and Clem VK5GL. The contact used amplitude modulation. The equipment used at the time gives an idea of the changes now evident in technology. Clem VK5GL used an RL7 tritet oscillator with an 8 MHz crystal, a 6V6GT doubler to 48 MHz, and an RK34 tripler to 144 MHz, with an 832 final with 18 watts input. The amplitude modulation resulted from a modulator using a pair of 6V6s in Class A push-pull. The receiver comprised a crystal-locked converter with a 6J6 push-pull RF amplifier, 6J6 push-push mixer with a C64 cathode follower. The oscillator section used a 1852 tritet, fifth harmonic from 9.4 MHz driving a half 6J6 trebler to 141 MHz. The band tuning from 3 to 7 MHz was done on a conventional 12-tube receiver. Clem's antenna comprised a 4/4 with the bays spaced a full wavelength apart with the top at 8.5 metres. Folded dipoles were used as radiators fed with 300 ohm open line. The first 432 MHz contact across the bite was on the 11th of December 1972 between Wally VK6WG and Tony VK5ZDY. The first 1296 MHz contact across the Bight was on the 25th of January 1977 between Wally VK6WG and Reg VK5QR, a world record of 1,885 kilometres. The historical information from Wally VK6KZ in AR magazine, August 1985. If you want to read Wally's three-page article on the history of VHF-UHF in VK6, go to my website, vk6uu.id.au, and follow the link to AR magazine, then 1985 August, starting on page 6. 7.3s from Will, VK6UU.
The value of clubs within the amateur radio community was recognised in the very early days of amateur radio. Here in Western Australia, as far as can be determined, the first amateur radio club was formed in 1913 and later morphed into the Wireless Institute of Western Australia. Since that time, many clubs have been and gone, but the idea and usefulness of clubs lives on. The social benefits of clubs are well documented. However, there's so much more to be gained in our amateur radio hobby from joining a club. And when we say club, the term embraces any group that gets together with a common interest. Next week, News West presents its Club Focus edition, where we invite clubs to promote who they are and what they get up to. So here's your chance to wave your club flag. Ideally, you'll submit your item recorded by a club member, sent as an email attachment to newswest@vk6.net. Items should be 2 to 3 minutes in length. We look forward to hearing from your club. The deadline is noon on Fridays.
On HF, VHF and UHF, via the VK6 linked repeater network, and online, this is News West from VK6 ARN.
Good morning, this is Roy VK6 X-Ray Victor with this week's helpline for the 24th of October 2021. I only have one item for you this morning, and today we have looking for help. Please, Mark VK6 Bravo Sierra Alpha is looking for a Hi-Q or Scorpion or other brand of US-made mobile antenna. And in good working order. Maybe that's an antenna tuning unit. It's a Hi-Q or a Scorpion or other US brand made antenna and tuning unit. Covers 160 through 10 metres. Please, if you can help Mark, VK6 Bravo Sierra Alpha. His phone number is 0408-688-903. 0408-688-903. Email address to vk6bravo sierra alpha@iinet.net.alphauniform. And that's all I have for you for this day. Everything else has been dealt with and happy. So if you have any items for next week's broadcast, please contact me. The email address is victorkilo6xrayvictor@bigpond.com, and I'll attempt to help you out wherever I can. Again, that address, vk6xrayvictor@bigpond.com. And 7.3 from me once again. Cheers.
Thanks for listening, and thanks to the broadcasters and callback collectors and those who maintain the repeaters that carry the news broadcasts. Thanks to the studio team and to casual contributors this week. Next week, we're club focusing. And as usual, we need clubs to send in their bits for inclusion. How much DX have you mustered up lately? Tell you what, just hang around for the callbacks, then get on air and make some noise.